Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Danielle McCartney, Sports Radio 101.9 FM, the Fan, WFAN.
Good morning, New York sports fans. I'm Danielle McCartney, McCartney After Midnight. And I'll be talking all things New York sports with you till 6 a.m. on this early Sunday morning. Or is it a late Saturday night? If you are like a lot of people out tonight and you're out and about in the city that never sleeps, or you're working on a weekend like usual, me and Nick are too. And we are coming to you live from the, I guess we're going to brand this the Carton and Roberts studio here in Lower Manhattan. You guys know that number, 877-337-6666. And let's load them up with your best content only, please. No nonsense. It's an Islanders and a Nets playoff weekend, everyone. Plus, Saturday night, the Yankees dropped a roller coaster in extra innings. And the Mets, well, their fans are bringing the brooms to Citi Field tomorrow looking for a sweep of one of the hottest teams in baseball, the San Diego Padres. And I've got some great guests lined up for you tonight at 4:40. I've got Odyssey NBA insider Brian Scalabrine to review Game 3 and to preview Game 4 of the Nets and Bucks series. And at 3:40, I've got my first NHL version of beatboxing in time to preview the Stanley Cup semifinal between the Islanders and the Lightning. Arthur Staple from The Athletic NYC will rep the Islanders, and Eric Erlandson from LightningInsider.com will battle on Tampa Bay's behalf. Do you guys remember at the beginning of the movie Titanic? I know you've seen it. When Rose, who's now an old lady, starts the whole story and movie by saying, "It's been 84 years since she last saw the ship." Well, for the New York Islanders, in reality, it's been 268 days since they last saw the Tampa Bay Lightning. Although it might feel like it's been 84 years, it's been a long while since the Lightning eliminated the Islanders in Game 6 of the Eastern Conference Finals on September 18, 2020. And after a long offseason, 56 regular season games, and two rounds of the 2021 playoffs, the Islanders have a shot at redemption, at revenge. Like the Greek mythological Titan Prometheus, the team from Long Island is looking to travel to NHL's Mount Olympus, the Amalie Arena, and steal some electricity from the NHL Zeus, the Tampa Bay Lightning. They're looking to take that spark and, like Prometheus, spread it around, igniting every player on that roster and every Islander fan in the stands and at home. Hopefully, though, for them, they don't have the same fate as Prometheus, who was chained to the mountainside by Zeus with an eagle that pecked out his liver, which grows back, by the way, every single day. And imagine that, clawing back deep into the playoffs each and every year, only to be knocked out by the Tampa Bay Lightning at the very last step before the Stanley Cup championship every single year. Fans can hope that maybe this year's Islanders will be their own Hercules. To do so, New York will need to dethrone the reigning champs from last year's bubble playoffs. From last season's semifinal, New York has 19 players returning and Tampa Bay has 18. The biggest loss between the two teams, obviously, Islanders left wing Anders Lee. Last playoffs, he accounted for 7 goals and 11 points of the New York offense. 4 of those points came in the Lightning series alone. The Islanders have not seen a Stanley Cup final since the 1983, 84 season. And that's longer than I've been alive. Nick, too. So this, the rematch of the century. Well, maybe not the rematch of the century, but you get what I'm trying to do here. I successfully predicted a six-game Islanders victory in round one. I successfully predicted a six-game round two, although I had the Bruins winning the series. But hey, I don't like to be wrong, but I like being wrong in this situation. Yes, yes, yes. I am here with you right now predicting that the New York Islanders, after a six-game series against the Tampa Bay Lightning, will be playing for this year's Stanley Cup championship against none other than the Las Vegas Golden Knights. It's improbable that they've made it this far, and they're playing with house money. But the New York Islanders are getting hot at the right time. Forward Josh Bailey said, "We feel like we still have some unfinished business." And you know what? Motivation is not captured in a box score, and it is not captured in an analytics department. So what do the Islanders need to do? One, there are two things, actually. So here's the list. One, the Islanders should start this series, and I know this is not a popular opinion here. They should start this series with Sorokin minding their net in game one. Vasilevsky from the Lightning, all world, yes. But in this particular playoffs so far this year, his save percentage is exactly that, to the thousandth of a point to Ilya Sorokin. Oh, believe it. After all, Sorokin delivered a game one victory in the first series, while Varlamov delivered a game one loss in the second series. I'm not saying sit the hot hand Varlamov for long. I just want him sitting in game one. Get some rest, sit in game one. The Islanders cannot afford to drop game one against this dangerous, fast, furious Lightning team. And I think Sorokin gives you a better chance to win game one. And two, guys, I want you to keep your eyes glued to the second period of every single game this series. Why? At the conclusion of the second period, the Lightning, in the last postseason and in this regular season, are combined 27-0. They're unbeaten. This playoffs, you ask? They've only lost one game when leading after the second period. So between, and they're sitting at 8-1 this season, this postseason. So tying this all together, since the beginning of the playoffs last season, if Tampa Bay is ahead at the end of the second period, they've gone on to win that game 35 out of 36 times. That's pretty remarkable, right? Well, it's not a total death wish for the Islanders because they've played some of their best hockey in the second period during these playoffs. They outscored the other team 18-8. So the second period will be crucial in a series that is going to be a lot closer than many people think. With Game 4 on deck later today in the Eastern Conference semifinals between the Nets and Bucks, in the latest episode of Playoff Unpredictability, a look back at Game 3 revealed that the story of the night was, believe it or not, the Nets' defense. Because of the very low-scoring affair, Game 3, in fact, was the twilight zone for both teams. While the Bucks registered 8 blocks in the game, the Nets logged 8 steals. In fact, in 2 of the 3 games that they've played so far, the Nets' defense held the Bucks to under 90 points, which is actually astonishing because the Bucks were the NBA's highest-scoring regular season team, 120 points per game, and they average 108 points per game in the playoffs, with those 2 games factored in. Steve Nash nailed it after the game 3, that is, when he said, "We gave ourselves a chance because of our defense. Our offense just couldn't keep up tonight." When was the last time you heard that, Nets fans? The problem was that the Nets fell into a 30-11 hole by the end of the first quarter, dominated by Antetokounmpo and Middleton. They were the only 2 guys to put up points for Milwaukee in that entire quarter. Do you remember way back when we talked about my key to the Nets playoffs? Basically, not allowing the opposing team's star to beat you? Well, it turns out that the Bucks had 2 stars in that particular game, the usual suspects too. The aforementioned Antetokounmpo and Middleton. They combined for 68 of the Bucks' 86 points. Kyrie Irving after the game said, "We had to weather that storm. It definitely put us on our heels the rest of the game, playing catch-up and playing their style of basketball." True. Durant said, "They just hit a few more shots than we did." Also true. I mean, look at Joe Harris, who is used to averaging 14 points per game. He made one basket. One. And Antetokounmpo basically said that instinctually, he felt like he had to take a bunch of threes. Nobody knows why, but he was 1 for 8. Terrible. But I bring this up because, instinctually, Bruce Brown decided to drive the lane to try to score in the remaining seconds. What? Instinctually, Steve Nash, after the botched Nets inbound pass in the final seconds, had one timeout left and decided instinctually that he just wasn't going to use it in that moment. Why didn't he use it? I know I would have. Call the last timeout, go back to the drawing board, and draw up something for your best shooter, Kevin Durant. That game was winnable for that team. So with Harden officially out for game 4, as I told you last week, he's going to be fine for the next series. They're going to sit him for this one, unless they get into trouble deep in the series. And with Jeff Green listed officially as questionable for game 4, the Nets will keep the same game plan. Will there be a repeat performance? I think not. The Nets are going to come out and pummel the Bucks. There are two ways that I would do it. A, get to the line. The Nets only went to the foul line 8 times on Thursday, as opposed to the Bucks 19 times. And the Nets are a really good foul shooting team. And B, keep Giannis out there trying three-pointers. Thursday night, we talked about it. He had a career-high three-pointers in a postseason game, which was 8. He averages 0.6 made three-pointers per game. He's a 12.5% three-point shooter this regular season. Leave him out there. I tried so hard and got so far. But in the end, it doesn't even matter. What a deflating, defeating day in Yankees universe in both Philadelphia and in Brooklyn. Both the Yankees and Luis Severino tried so hard and got so far, but in the end, it really might not even matter. In Brooklyn, we'll start with that first. Luis Severino experienced what could be a major setback in his return from Tommy John surgery. No, not in his arm, but in his leg. He could not even walk off the field under his own power with a right groin injury that occurred at the end of his throwing motion. He'll get an MRI later today, Sunday. And, well, his return to the Yankees around the All-Star break is, you know, undoubtedly going to be pushed even further back. And an injury like this, it can be a while. And Meredith Marakovic asked Aaron Boone if the news was upsetting to him, you know, after his game. His response was, no question. I don't know many details. And in Philadelphia Saturday evening, the Yankees recorded their first back-to-back walk-off losses since September of, guess when, 2014. They lost to the Phillies 8-7 in 10 innings. Jameson Taillon started the absolute worst game I've ever seen from a starting pitcher in my life. In throwing only 34 pitches, he gave up 4 runs on 5 hits and only logged 1 single out. He was absolutely brutal. He had 1 swing and miss, and it took him 28 pitches to get the first out. The only out that he was able to record. Aaron Boone, after the game, said, I think mostly he's thrown the ball well. Even better with his numbers coming in. Today was obviously a struggle for him. What? After the game, Taillon called it embarrassing and humiliating. At least he gets it. During his press conference, I scratched my head twice after an Aaron Boone move during the game. First time was when he pinch hit Giancarlo Stanton, knowing as a pinch hit, Aaron Boone, the computer analytics dude, the guru, right? As a pinch hitter, Giancarlo Stanton hits, ready for this? Batting average is .069 with 18 strikeouts and in 29 at-bats throughout his career. Judge had just scored from a hustle play from second base. The momentum was shifting. Stanton grounds out on one pitch. Inning over. Rally. Potential rally. Killed. And the second time I scratched my head in the game was this. Bottom of the fourth. No outs. Phillies are winning 4-2. Aaron Boone decides he's going to bring the infield in order to cut that run off on third. It was a runner on third. Aaron Boone's going to bring the infield in to cut that runner off. Like, why? You're in the bottom of the fourth. There's plenty of time left in the game. You, in a ground ball, you look the guy back, you throw to first. And guess what? If the ball was going to the outfield anyway, especially if it was hit to Brett Gardner, that runner was going to score. And with that, Segura blooped a ball right behind the shortstop's dirt, which would have been easily catchable by the shortstop had he not been brought in by Aaron Boone. Herrera scored from third. It's not 5-2. It became 5-2, and that run is completely on Aaron Boone's shoulders. And, well, would you look at the difference in the game? The Yankees lost by one in extra innings. DJ LeMahieu, after the game, who I normally agree with, he said, "I really like how we competed and how we're playing, and I know those results are going to come, but it's frustrating when we don't play well and we don't get the win." I have a question. How do you know those results are going to come? Is that what your manager tells you? The Yankees are now 3-6 in extra innings, and that is indicative of a larger issue. They can't hit situationally, and a bigger problem. This postseason coming up, which is obviously the Yankees' goal, really emphasizes situational hitting. And as far as that extra inning rule, and I'm sure I'm going to get some calls tonight, I still like it. It forces batters to hit situationally, score the run, bring Chapman in, and end the game. Simple. Philadelphia's Jankowski's bunt probably won the game for them. And you know what? Good for him. I might have to learn this song on my trumpet. I had to go with Diaz's entrance song because he absolutely shut down the Padres for the Mets today. And the beat, this beat just matches the mood in and around the Mets at the moment. According to the Mets Friday night's SNY broadcast, that game started a stretch for the Mets of Friday night, that is 33 games in 31 days with, they said, three doubleheaders. And they also said that 22 of those 33 were going to be at home and 16 were going to be against division rivals. The Mets, who at this moment are sitting pretty atop the NL East ahead of the second place Phillies by four games, could put some real distance between themselves and others in the division leading up to the All-Star break. Who would have thunk it? I hate to say it, but I have $20 on the Mets to win the World Series this year before the season even started. After Saturday's game, there's a lot to be happy about if you're a Met fan. Marcus Stroman pitched an absolute 85-pitch gem for the Mets at a near-capacity Citi Field. And their pitchers thereafter, Loop, Lugo, and Diaz, virtually silenced the bats of one of the most potent offenses in the league. That is neither a dramatization nor an exaggeration. Diaz mowed through the heart of the Padres in order in the ninth, retiring on 10 pitches. Tatis Jr., Hosmer, and Myers. Game over. And Tatis Jr. is second in the league in home runs. Offensively, Francisco Lindor set the tone real early with a first pitch, first inning, two-run home run with no outs just yet. And that was all you really need to know about this game. And don't look now, but any impatient person that doubted Lindor's ability early on, not me, looks real foolish right now. He's been on a slow climb, a slow ascension since the beginning of the season. His batting average is up 97 points in June as compared to April. His on-base percentage is up 60 points in the same time frame. And his slugging is like double what it was in April. Told you so. The Mets and their owner are looking for a 1:10 p.m. sweep at Citi Field. And Steve Cohen tweeted around 7 p.m., "Winner, winner, I'm in the mood for a sweep." And I'm in the mood to talk with you guys. So much to do, so little time. I have set the table for you, and it is time to eat your 2:22 a.m. snacks. I can't wait to talk with you guys. 877-337-6666. I'm Danielle McCartan, after midnight on The Fan in the one and only New York City. Oh, oh,
oh, O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.